It's Saturday. Sorry, there was nothing last Saturday. I have been traveling, and I think today I shall recount my stories of traveling like some sort of Danish female writer or Swedish from the 1600s who first began gallivanting around the globe and reporting back on what they had found. Mine wasn't quite as pioneering as that. It was just heading off to New York, where, you know, I had a really wonderful time, I must say. And that reminds me, I met, one of the many people I met out there was an actress called Mary McDonald Lewis, who impressed me so much. If you want to impress me, you ever meet me, you want to impress me, keep me there listening all night, be good at accents. For some reason, people who can do accents, who can impersonate other people, absolutely fascinate me. And I can just sit there watching it, just smiling like a puppy all night. And Mary McDonald Lewis had me in the palm of her hand and was doing, you know, it's not often that an American can so quickly switch to Welsh and then Argentinian Spanish and then all different kinds of things she was able to do. And she told me that the first tip, if she were teaching me to do an American accent, because you guys know I often try to do that, is to remember to speak from the front of the mouth. She said, you know, if you're doing French, you go to the front of the mouth, you do it like this, at the front, but American, it is also the same. So American, you also do, I don't know. And she said it'll be more natural as well because I was doing it too much. So, you know, to me, this is how me speaking with the front of my mouth to try and sound American. How does it sound? How does that sound, everyone listening? Maybe I'm hurting some eardrums and offending 350-odd million people. I don't know. But I would love to be able to do that well. And it's not an easy thing, is it, doing accents? Because you always sort of overdo them or they go all weird. Maybe if I ever get really rich, I'll employ her to be my personal accent helper, and I'll do one every month that I'll try to master. Anyway, what am I talking about today? Well, I suppose, I'll discuss my travels, and my travels were involved or centered around my speaking engagement at Dissident Dialogues, which was put on by Winston Marshall, who is the band member who played the banjo in Mumford & Sons. And he left after, was it liking or retweeting something that Andy Ngo, the supposedly, maybe he is right-wing, I don't know. I don't know much about Andy Ngo, someone tell me. But he retweeted his book or something like that, and it led to him having to leave the band. And now Winston, who's a very lovely man, is very much involved in this kind of centrist space, although he and I, I'm sure, do not agree on a lot of different things. But I won't go too much into that, except to say what a lovely man he is. And he put on this whole thing in New York, and we discussed, you know, free speech, gender, pretty much everything that this podcast has. Obviously, there was Israel-Palestine stuff. And then there was an amazing thing to end it. And I felt like I was really in a historic event. And I was there with my fiancée, Huli, who I was so pleased I was able to introduce to this world of sort of names of people from YouTube, because we all hung around in the VIP area feeling very elite and then feeling quite silly about that and then milling about downstairs with everyone else because it's a bit silly to be just upstairs all the time in the VIP thing. But we got to sit and watch Richard Dawkins have a debate with Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who, as many of you know, I think she also got a fatwa at the time that Salman Rushdie did. She's an ex-Muslim who spoke out against Islam, who has very recently, after being a prominent atheist and ally of Richard Dawkins's, Richard Dawkins, of course, probably the world's most famous atheist or one of them, she's converted to Christianity. She seems to have found God. And so we were able to bear witness at Dissident Dialogues to one of the most extraordinary debates, I think, of all time, where Dawkins and Ayaan Hirsi Ali took the stage. They sat there with Freddie Sayers from Unheard, who is pretty much an Adonis. I don't know if anybody knows about Freddie, but he's, I think he's in his early 40s, but he looks younger than me. And he's remarkably tall, even taller than me, actually. I'm 6'4". He's slightly taller. With flowing blonde hair and blue eyes. He really is something of an Adonis and a very smart man to boot. And he was moderating this historic event, and it was really extraordinary. What was funny, I hope he won't mind me saying this, I don't think he will because he has a good sense of humour, but those of you who know Alex O'Connor, well, he's one of my favourite people now, and I love hanging around with him. And he's remarkable because he's 24, 25 years old, and you don't realise it. He really appears, you know, as though he's 50-odd, this guy. Very Hitchens-esque, and he's famous for what he used to be called the Cosmic Skeptic. He was known as an atheist and a vegan, and he no longer does the vegan stuff as far as I can tell, and he does lots of other philosophical things. It's just Alex O'Connor now. It's not Cosmic Skeptic anymore, and he's incredibly popular. Now, the first thing to say about him is that he attracts groupies as he wanders across the hall. People just follow him, and they think it almost surprised me, if I didn't know how talented he was already, but it almost surprised me how people seemed to have traveled across to New York just for Alex. I mean, I think a few did just for me, which is an extraordinary thing in itself. And they came and said hello. But the numbers that Alex was able to get over there was really something. And he's a very nice man as well. And a good person to go to a bar with. He's very good. But when he was doing a speech, I am going to get back to Dawkins in a minute. When Alex was doing a speech, he was talking also of philosophy and religion and these kinds of things. And he quoted C.S. Lewis, and I can't remember what the quotes were. And he was able to recite the poetry just in the moment, as these intellects often can. And he also spoke of sort of phases of C.S. Lewis, who wrote Alice in Wonderland, for those who don't know, becoming a Christian. And joked that, well, Alex has sort of got to the first couple of stages, but hasn't actually become one yet. I mean, he's a renowned atheist. But it was quite funny because I think without speaking, there was an unspoken, almost rivalry going on between Alex and I, whereby every time Dawkins made, because we were sat next to each other, I think Hawley, my fiance, was in between us. But every time Dawkins made a damning point against Ayaan Hirsi Ali, from an atheistic perspective, and Alex sort of stayed motionless while I applauded vehemently. And when Ayaan made a point that was about beauty and subjectivity and the mystery of the universe and humility and the power of feeling and those kinds of things, Alex then vociferously clapped his hands, and we were sort of almost competing with one another. And I think what was going on really was, and I didn't speak to him too, we didn't have a debrief so much, apart from acknowledging it briefly afterwards, but there was a little bit of a, I think what was really happening was Alex's claps were saying to me, gosh, this Dawkins stuff that he's saying, while potentially true and accurate, doesn't necessarily contain the beauty and inquisitiveness that Ayaan does. And I think Alex was also saying, hey, I've been doing this atheist shtick for 10 years. This is all like philosophy 101 for me. I'm interested in what Ayaan said because, and then I was then sort of clapping by saying, yes, I realize that to be true. And I realize that the Dawkins stuff is pretty obvious. However, I've come to a stage in my life where I value truth over anything else, and truth in itself is beauty. These are not arguments, of course, that would surprise an intellect such as Alex's, but it was something that I thought, I do get what my claps were saying. I get what you're saying, Alex, and I know it's the obvious thing to clap Dawkins, us both being atheists, and I know that Ayaan is speaking majestically, but what she was saying to me just didn't hold up to scrutiny. It just didn't. It was a lot of stuff about just having a general feeling of wanting to believe, choosing to believe. And these were all perhaps noble causes and motivations. And they received ample applause across the hall in where we were. It was this beautiful, it was like a yacht bunker or something that had views stretching out of the New York skyline outside. It was really quite something as we watched this momentous debate going on. And so she received, I would even say, 60% of the applause, really. I think Dawkins, it was maybe 40%. This was a big mix of people, both religious and atheistic, hanging out together, perhaps in a way that 20, 30 years ago we might not have been able to do, because that was the culture war 20 years ago. And now those two sides in some respects have united, as Alex O'Connor and I discussed on the episode I have with him from a few months back. But they've united against something that they see as a greater evil, which I believe is woke or progressiveness or whatever it might be. And really what we're saying is people who are so convinced in their arguments on the left that they have just foregone science and they've placed more emphasis on things like ideology, identity, feelings, things that are of course important but should never take precedent over biology, over science. But one interesting thing that has maybe reminded many of us centrists of the perils on the other side, of course, was Tucker Carlson talking on Joe Rogan, when he said evolutionary theory is just a theory and all of these kinds of things. And I think even Rogan was a bit, well, especially Rogan, I think Rogan's pretty secular. He was a bit taken aback. And some of the reasoning from Carlson was just, I think, pretty bonkers. And so I was fortunate enough while I was out in New York to interview quite a few different people because they were all speakers at this dissident dialogue event. And one of them was Colin Wright, who has the Swipe Right Instagram and Twitter. Well, Colin's wonderful, firstly. What a friendly, lovely, interesting person. But he's also an evolutionary biologist. And so what we did is, although this channel tends to now be about culture wars and you have to sort of stay in one lane if you want to be successful on YouTube. And I know you guys are only, this only goes out on the audio podcast. And I think it is a shame in many respects. So what I'm trying to do is really frame a lot of videos or episodes as one way with the title and the thumbnail and stuff, and give the second half of the actual conversation, the more nuanced conversation, a bit more balance. That's something I'm going to be working really hard to incorporate in the coming months, to push back more, to argue more, and to have more interesting conversations that are not one way. Because we have all been reminded that it's not, of course, just the left. Of course, historically, at least in my lifetime, it was often the right that ignored science. And when I say that, a lot of people will be shaking their heads going, oh, science, where's science got us with, you know, a lot of people are anti-vaxxers, a lot of people are anti this or that. They've seen cases where things have gone wrong with regards to science. And what I'd say to that is where science has been implemented badly by politicians, by policymakers. It's not the science that is wrong. It's us. And it can be the scientists. They're often wrong. I mean, they're probably wrong more often than they're right. That's how you find stuff out. But over the years and decades, you would think they start to get it go in the right direction. That doesn't mean that people will apply that science well. I think an example of that with COVID, and I don't want to get into the anti-vax stuff because I just don't know enough about it. A friend of mine's a doctor. He said the vax is good. Well, you know, I had it. I was fine. But one thing I didn't like, and I was quite vocal about it, was the mask. And not because it was ineffective, because, again, by the accounts of my friend who's a doctor, it was effective and is effective, at least at slowing down the spread of the virus or whatever it might be, and helping hospitals to recover in time to be able to treat the next round of people. But the difference was so small across even an entire country that you have to weigh up the other thing. And that's where science, I think, lets us down. It's not science letting us down. That's where we get let down by science, because of the policymakers. They made decisions based on what they knew and based on science. The science, I think, was often right, or usually right, or the scientists were usually right. But they didn't think about the negatives of slowing down economies for years and years, putting many, many, many individuals into abject poverty, and the social effects, children growing up without being able to see faces, a whole world of people now becoming neurotic about germs and all sorts of anxieties coming up. Those are the downsides, Anyway, that's just an example, I think, of where, look, it's not the science. It's either scientists or policymakers who are making decisions which are very, very difficult decisions to make, but where they might get those things a little bit wrong, at least in your opinion. So that's why I'm fully on board with the science, despite a lot of people being quite anti-science these days. I see away luggage a lot when I travel. As much as I love its looks, I prefer soft side suitcases and always wished Away made one. Well, guess what? Now they do. This suitcase seriously looks better than any old school soft side suitcases I've seen and is designed to be lighter than others on the market. Soft side comes in four of their best selling sizes and tried and true colours. There is something for everyone in the lineup, two carry on sizes, two checked sizes, four colours, black, blue, pink, grey. Made from a high strength nylon, the bag is tear resistant as well as weather resistant. I spilled a little bit of coffee on the grey one this morning and can confirm the claim holds up. The bag is soft but not sensitive, super durable, flexible and expandable. Bonus points for the compression pad system that helps you pack it in and the anti-tipping stabilizer that holds the bag steady while expanded. Both of which are proprietary to Away. And that's actually my favorite bit. It doesn't sort of wobble this way and that. I absolutely pack mine full, take it everywhere I go. Well, when I'm going on holiday, that is. And no matter what's packed inside, it doesn't seem to tip. You've got to check out the new soft side luggage from Away. Head on over to awaytravel.com/heretics. That's awaytravel.com/heretics to see the new soft side luggage from Away. awaytravel.com/heretics. Anyway, Colin Wright, in the second half of the episode, which will be out in the next couple of weeks, discuss why we know that evolution's a thing and why theory doesn't mean the same thing as we think it does. I mean, Tucker Carlson was saying, well, that's just a theory. And, you know, well, that's not what theory exactly means in that sense. I mean, my understanding of it, especially after talking to Colin, is like, no, this is what's happened. It's not, you know, this is it. There are unanswerables. But this is the thing. I'm sure a lot of people are angry listening, going, no, it's not true. But, you know, I firmly do believe in evolution, as I believe in biological sex. These things, when I was a child, were not questioned. And I do wonder if we've gotten into a stage where we overanalyze. This was something, maybe it was Carl Benjamin said on the show. It was Dr. Ian McGilchrist, who said there are stages of empires and the last stage comes after it becomes, I suppose, postmodern or begins to analyze itself too much. And it was something I saw Christopher Hitchens had said the other day, and I want to get it right, so let me just find it. The barbarians never take a city until someone holds the gates open to them. I mean, that's a fascinating one, isn't it? That's a really interesting one. And he continued, and it's your own multicultural authorities who will do it for you. And that puts us in a hard place because you don't want to sound racist. And you like the idea of lots of immigration. Maybe you don't want to be one of those anti-immigration people. And I've got Matthew Goodwin coming on. I'm going to ask him a lot. He's an immigration expert. He's very skeptical. Has it reached a point now? I mean, growing up, I was basically told, you know, you question immigration, you are a racist. And even back then, that was pretty much the worst thing you could be. So you didn't question it. You just went, huh. And I always thought, okay, well, let's look at the positives. And of course, there are so many positives. I mean, I'm an immigrant. Well, no, I'm not. Why did I say that? My fiance is. And I think therein lies the issue. I mean, I don't want to talk about her too much because I don't think she'd, you know, she appreciates her privacy. But she's somebody who not only likes the UK, but positively adores it. She is Argentinian and loves her country back home as well. But she's also adopted this one as one that, I mean, she would bleed for this country. She loves everything about the, you know, Western values here, the modernity of pretty much everything, the opportunities to grow, the sense of humor, the history, the culture. And I think most people, especially even those who are pretty much on the fence about immigration, even those who are a bit worried about immigration, would very much welcome those people. When Christopher Hitchens talks about multicultural, and when people say multiculturalism has failed, I think that's a very different issue, and that's really interesting. It's something I hadn't thought about too much. But is it one thing to say, hey, I don't mind what skin color you are, and I don't even mind where you come from? And on the other hand, but if you come here in a multicultural sense, and if we take that to mean lots of very different cultures all living together in harmony, has that failed? Is it beginning to fail? I saw that guy. Have you seen that guy? I don't even want to say his name, who is a Muslim guy in the UK from the Green Party, who won a seat in the local elections. And his celebration was just terrifying. He shouted Allahu Akbar, right, while screaming, jumping around, shouting about Israel, a foreign conflict. And I thought, is there a mitigating factor here? Is there a hospitable way that I can, or a kindly way I can look at this and say, okay, this is the other side to it. This is multiculturalism in action, and I have to understand and respect it. After all, what does Allahu Akbar mean? Isn't it God is great or something? Well, you know, would I mind if a Christian shouted that? And then I thought, well, firstly, I think I would mind. Yeah, I would find it odd at the very least. Someone who's won a local election seat starts screaming and shouting, God is great. In the UK, that would be unusual. I'm sure there are parts of America where that would be slightly less unusual. And that's okay, because that's the local culture. But in the UK, that's really odd. And if you've just been elected to represent the people of the UK, and you're screaming something that may well mean God is great, but if you have any knowledge of this country and its very recent history and any understanding and any sense of humility, you would know that that is a phrase very much associated with the 7/7 bombings in the UK. Many people lost their lives, many people lost loved ones, and it was absolutely terrifying. And although in scale and magnitude it didn't quite equate to that of 9/11, I do remember, and I'll never forget, coming downstairs. I was living with my family. I don't know how old I must have been back then, 18, and seeing on the TV that several locations across London had been attacked in a planned, united attack against British values. And many, many attacks. Of course, there was Madrid. Of course, there was 9/11. But there have been many, many others. One of the scary things that happened, from someone who I think was just a little bit silly, unfortunately, but meant no harm, was when we were watching that Dawkins versus Ayaan Hirsi Ali thing, a woman a few rows behind us with an accent that may have been from anywhere, but potentially was Middle Eastern. Doesn't matter, but it's just an accent. Screamed out, as Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who has the fatwa, took the stage, I love you, Ayaan. Obviously, the first bit, you know, it sent shockwaves through the audience. It was one of the scariest things, moments ever, because I think we were all on edge already. There didn't seem to be all that much security, given Ayaan was taking the stage. And she said it so slowly and loudly that it really sounded like she was about to blow herself up. Look, she was just saying, I love you. It was slightly misguided, but a very scary moment. And something for people to bear in mind when they want to shout, I love you, at ex-Muslims on stage. But that's the kind of, that's how it's penetrated us in the UK, I'm sure in the US, and much of the rest of the Western world. Let's not forget, that is probably very scary for a lot of Muslims in the Middle East as well, and Muslims around the world who are often the victims of other Muslims and who are just as scared as the rest of us. It's particularly scary for many Muslims and ex-Muslims because they're the ones who face the brunt of it, and the West doesn't even seem to care. So that's now an elected official who was screaming and ranting. He looked mad. Going on about Israel. I don't know if it's worth me going into my views on Israel and Palestine. I think a lot of you know it already, but it's a complicated thing. My understanding from Coleman Hughes on Joe Rogan, he was saying, and Coleman's great, and he was saying that the civilian death rate compared to targets is significantly lower than that of pretty much any major war, particularly the recent ones, Britain in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that people then call it a genocide when the population of Palestine has quintupled in recent years, while Israel's has stayed the same, is quite remarkable. Again, I think it's a case of emotion superseding reality. None of that means that it's not terribly sad what's going on in Palestine, though none of us really know what's happening right now, because all we're getting is most of it, and it's particularly statistics, is coming from Hamas, a terrorist organization whose mission is to murder the Jews. They don't have any qualms about that. They don't hide that. They make that very, very apparent. It's in their charter. So it's a strange one. I mean, that's why most Jewish people are going, well, hang on. That doesn't mean you're not allowed to criticize the Israeli government. A lot of friends of mine have said, hang on, what's going on? Why can't you criticize Israel? People say it's anti-Semitic. Why is that? And I think the issue that many Jews, such as myself, have, and you can be the judge as to whether this is a valid concern or not, because this is the battlefield of ideas. And we put ideas out there, and you guys can say, yeah, I see where he's coming from, but not for me. But I mean, I've seen this defended terribly. I saw on GB News the other day, somebody was saying it's not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel. And the GB News presenter said, well, a lot of Jews will tell you it is, so it is. And I thought, that's no better than the woke left. That's saying, well, I identify as triggered, therefore, that's a bad thing that you did. That's not the case at all. The reason that many Jews consider it anti-Semitic, firstly, is because of the lack of concern for the initial fights, you know, the initial attack, raping, murdering, killing children in Israel. Secondly, the failure to mention when these people say, I mean, there's students all around the world right now chanting that they are with Hamas, the terrorist organization. As I said, in their charter, they very explicitly say they would like to kill all the Jews. So it's no wonder, I hope you understand, at least a feeling that we have, many Jewish people, that to align oneself with Hamas is to be anti-Semitic. But it goes deeper than that, because ultimately the main reason that I don't consider it anti-Semitic to criticize Israel, but my radar goes off, is just the pure exceptionalism. Where were these people concerned about gays being thrown off buildings in many Muslim countries? Where are these people while Saudi Arabia commits all kinds of atrocities? Those who say Israel doesn't have a right to exist. What other country ever has its right to exist called into question? Ever. I just haven't heard it. And if you say, yes, but it formed quite late, what was it, 48, 49, I'm not sure. Well, Pakistan was formed a year later under just such contentious circumstances and has committed untold human rights abuses in that time, including expelling Afghani refugees and Afghani peoples from Pakistan only this year. Why didn't it make the news? Why don't people seem to care? It was nice being at dissident dialogues with a lot of centrists, because when you are a Jewish person, you know you're going to get it from the left. you're going to get it from the right. And that's what made me feel so comfortable at this event, because it feels like a diminishingly small number of centrists are those who will continue to stand up and be counted. Of course you should care about Israel, but then I would ask, what would you do if you're the Prime Minister of Israel right now? What would you do if you had just been breached, attacked in such a way that, I mean, it really was as close to 9/11 as it gets. And remember how that launched America into a war. I've said before about Ireland. In Ireland, they're all, you know, alongside the, or not all, that's unfair. There are loads of Irish people who follow this podcast and are not that way at all. But there is, as they will say, a strong contingent of people who would align themselves more with Palestine. They had one attack from a Muslim person. I'm not even sure it was necessarily a Muslim person, but it was reported as one who stabbed a teacher. And people in Dublin burned down a refugee hotel in response. Well, imagine if hundreds and hundreds and hundreds had been taken and killed and raped and tortured, taken hostage. Would Ireland not react pretty aggressively? Would it not wage war on the country that had done so? And then people say, hey, why don't Israel just get out of Gaza? Well, they did in 2005. That's one of the most misreported things about this whole thing. Every conversation I have, people are going, yeah, well, they shouldn't have been occupying it. They're not. They pulled out in 2005. Now, yes, they have control of the borders, but so does Egypt on the other side. No one seems to care. Now, Israel is still in control of the West Bank on the other side of, I mean, it's ironically almost it's on the east of Israel, because it's on the West Bank of the Jordan River, or the River Jordan, as Michael Jackson sings it in a song I like. So, but the calls to do that, I mean, they pulled out of Gaza, and look what happened. Hamas took control and murdered many Israeli civilians in the most gruesome attacks imaginable. So what do they do? Do they also pull out of the West Bank and leave that huge mass? The West Bank takes up a huge proportion. I mean, it's a large place, significantly larger than Gaza. Imagine pulling out and leaving that to the, and leaving the Palestinian people as well, potentially to another terrorist organization.
This summer, ditch the walk to the rideshare lot at Love Field and get picked up curbside in a luxury SUV. I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto. We've redefined your airport ride with professional employee drivers, a consistent fleet of SUVs, and plenty of luggage space in every Alto. Plus, every Dallas Alto has a car seat for your little adventurer, too. Take your time. Your Alto will wait as long as you need, and the first 5 minutes are on us. Try your first ride free with code SUMMER. Download the Alto app or visit ridealto.com/radio to learn more.
None of this negates the horrors that Palestinian people face. I just don't think there's an answer, unfortunately. But to paint Israel as monsters for doing what I think any other country would do, every time I've seen an interview, maybe on Trigonometry, they've done one, Piers Morgan's done, with somebody who is pro-Palestine, every single time the question comes up, okay, so what would you do if you were in charge of Israel now? And I've never seen an answer. What, make it one state? You think that could work now? After October 7th, or even before then, offer a two-state solution. Well, it was offered countless times. It wasn't accepted. So, I don't know. I don't think there's an answer to that. But that is why, just in any, if anyone's sort of wondering why people consider it anti-Semitic to criticize Israel or the Israeli government, it isn't that it actually is anti-Semitic to do so. It is just, hey, hang on. You know, firstly, what else could they do? Please offer some solutions, you know. And secondly, where were you when atrocities around the world were occurring? Now, some people were awake to those causes, and those people I would give a much larger benefit of the doubt to. But, you know, we're in a weird place right now. University campuses completely overrun with, You know what? I don't even think it's anti-Semitism. I just think it's narcissism. And I think whatever the big cause is, that's what they go after. And that I've mentioned it before, but that moment in Breaking Bad where, what's his name? Heisenhoff. What's his name? Heisenberg. Heisenberg, played by Bryan Cranston. He, throughout the series, whenever he has to explain himself to people, because he goes into this whole crazy drug world, puts his family at risk, all this stuff because he's dying, he says he's doing it for other people. And there's this bit right near the end where he's about to say it again, and he has this amazing moment of realization, one that an adult should have, and one that a teenager maybe doesn't yet have the wisdom to do, and says, I did it for me. Wow, what a moment that was, that realization. And I know that since I've started realizing more and more how many things that I thought I was doing out of selflessness, I'm really doing for me. And that's a surprisingly freeing feeling, because you no longer have to sort of compete for virtue, even with yourself, because even the good stuff you do, you're doing for you as well. So then you can make a decision and say, is this good for people around me? If it is, I'll try and do it. I think when you don't realize that a lot of the good things you do, you actually do for yourself, I think you're a danger to yourself and to society. I really do believe that. And I think those students, how could they possibly understand their own selfishness, their own narcissism at 18 years old, at 21 years old? But unfortunately, they've been coddled beyond any generation ever, and they've been taught by their professors, who are 95% left-wing and woke and idealistic, that reality isn't real, and that slogans and sloganeering and fighting for oppressed people is what makes for a good person. Well, of course, fighting for oppressed people, if you're actually doing it for other people, of course that's a noble thing to do, a noble cause. But the problem is, you're too young at that age, I think, to understand the nuance of the bigger picture. Very rarely are there wars entirely isolated and just around one person being terrible. I don't know enough about Kim Jong-un and various tyrants and despots, but of course they exist. But outside of that, if two democracies, or if they go to war with one another, it's likely there's more to it than we realize. Again, I don't know enough about Russia and Ukraine. My understanding is simply Russia's a bad guy. They wanted more land. They decided to invade because they're bad people and the Ukrainians are wonderful. That's all I know. I doubt that's actually the case. I might be wrong about that, but even if Russia are the bad guys in this, I'm sure that it's more complicated than the narrative that I've been fed. It might not be, but often it is. Often it's much more complicated. Often there are huge reasons that countries go to war, some of them selfish and some of them out of necessity. And you see these kids at universities, and I compare that. I mean, loads were just protesting outside of dissident dialogues. Loads of them. And you're going, you've got some of the greatest minds of all time in here, mine excluded, but you've got your Richard Dawkinses and your Alex O'Connors. We had the guys from Trigonometry, Constantine and Francis. We had Michael Schellenberger. We had Stella O'Malley there. Just loads of the big hitters. Bridget Fettersy, she was great fun. Got quite friendly with her. As I say, Freddie Sayers, and those, you know, apart from Bridget, I think those are mostly Brits. The Americans, I mean, the ones on my panel, Thomas Chatterton Williams, Michael Moynihan, advertising bigwig Dan Granger, Alex Berenson. These are sort of big names in on the American side as well that aren't so well known in the UK, perhaps. And it's amazing to see these brilliant thinkers. And then outside, you've just got guys at university who, like Dunning-Kruger, you know, they just think they know everything, and they're too stupid at that point to realize they don't. And it makes you wonder, at schools, should they teach humility? Should that be a class? You know, English literature, politics, humility. I think in Denmark they were teaching empathy at one stage, but I think that's missing something, because I think people don't, again, I think empathy is often selfish. You feel bad because you feel bad. And if people start telling you why you should feel bad, that's what teaching empathy is. I imagine they just show you like a trans person and say, hey, have some bloody empathy. I think that's a way to be indoctrinated. Really, you should teach humility and curiosity. Kids should be taught when they're 18. I mean, when I was 18 and I disagreed with older people, the first thing I thought was, well, because I was an idiot, I just thought, well, older people, they're just grouchy and old and selfish. That's why they vote differently from me. That's what most 18-year-olds think. And if I had had some lessons at 16, 17, like, hey, maybe this is idealistic as well. You know, maybe I wouldn't have listened. But if they were just taught enough times, like, hey, it is pretty typical, by the way, when you're 17 to 25 to have some views that you feel, you know, these are your convictions and you want to fight for them. But just be aware that those older people also went through those stages. And just because they moved away, it doesn't mean they were jaded by those things. It doesn't mean they became selfish. It might mean that they have more experience of the world and understand the complexities a little better than you do. Why don't we teach that? I don't know. That's something to think about. Let me know if you want to be taught that. Do you think that's a good idea? You can now respond on Spotify and all those things. I'll just give you a little rundown of my trip, though, because I went to the Hamptons. And that was a mistake. Bloody hell. How expensive is that place? And yeah, I know you're all going, yeah, well, we know that, Andrew. Like, what a stupid thing to even think or say. And I know. But wow. The thing is, with the, we just wanted somewhere. We're out in New York. We had 6 days. I took the missus with me. We had the hotel and flight all included. And I thought, okay, I don't want to be in New York the whole time, because it is, like any big city, wonderful and beautiful, but oppressive to be there for too long. Big towering buildings, noise, people everywhere, madness. And so we took 3 days out to go to the Hamptons, and we stayed in a beautiful hotel in Sag Harbor. One really cool thing was we went up to Montauk, and there's a lighthouse there or whatever. And we stopped at a little cafe, and we were sitting outside in the sun having a bit of food and drink, and a lovely woman, young woman, came over and said, she heard me just shouting stuff, and she came over and said, are you a podcaster? And I said, yeah. And she goes, you're Andrew, right? I went, yeah. And she recognized me. Now, I'm not showing off that I get recognized, because it doesn't happen that often anyway, but it is happening more and more in the UK. But I didn't expect it to happen off in the middle of nowhere in this sort of sleepy Montauk area in the States, where there really weren't many people or anything going on. And she listens, and she's probably listening now. So hello to you, and thanks for saying hello. That was a real privilege. And I'm fortunately, Julia just got back from the, bathroom, or being inside getting some food. I don't know what she was doing. So she was able to see that I had been recognized in the States, no less. So that was really cool. It is happening more in the UK. And it definitely happens, you know, when you're at these kinds of events, because that's why people are there. They're there to see all of us YouTubers and stuff. And it's such a wonderful phase. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you become like a Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks or whatever, you can't move. And that's not enjoyable. You can't enjoy that. But for me, it's like, once every few days, once every couple of weeks. I don't even go out very much. So it's a pleasure, especially, you know, in front of people I'm with, to show off to them. So that's important. But yeah, the Hamptons, I mean, a slice of pizza was like $20. I like a small slice. I could not believe it. I made the mistake, because I don't know much about fashion. And they've got all these fashion shops that are like Chanel and Hugo Boss and all that stuff. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to these other ones because I've never heard of them. It was these like weird names of shops, because they're going to be the cheap ones. Well, that was, as many of you, probably many of you are shaking your heads now, because those are the ones that are even more expensive. And I was looking at like a sweater and I'm like, oh, that's quite nice, you know, and I didn't know what this shop was. And I looked at the price tag. It was like $1,500. And it was almost the opposite of that Julia Roberts scene in Pretty Woman. She goes in and they sort of sniff at her because she doesn't look like she's wealthy enough to be able to afford anything from that shop. And it was the opposite because I think nowadays rich people, you know, since Steve Jobs and everyone started to dress really badly, sort of deliberately, that became a big status thing. So now they can't tell who looks rich and who doesn't. I come in with my English accent and it's the opposite of the Julia Roberts because they assume I can afford stuff. And I have to convince them, listen, I shouldn't even be sharing the air with you in this shop. I can't come close to being able to afford even one sock from this shop. But it's a very nice shop and thank you for talking to me, is what I said. But it is beautiful and it's a beautiful sort of countryside. What I would say is, you know, it's not quite Cornwall in the southwest of the UK. I imagined it as sort of an American Cornwall. And it does have these beautiful buildings, really nice. The architecture, this sort of colonial thing going on, and it's really pretty. But it's, you know, its villages are still American villages, by which I mean there's like a highway running through them, or at least a large or wide, ample road of some description. It's not like the twisting and turning valleys and little roads and pathways and cobbled lanes of Cornwall. But it has its own charm. But my word, had I been there any more than 3 days, I would have had to, you know, remortgage my house, which already has a mortgage. So it'd just be extra mortgaged. But it was a wonderful time in all. I know last time I was moaning about the worst thing about America is how often they play Phil Collins on the radio. I didn't hear much radio this time. I had the 3G this time, so I just put my iPad on. So this time I don't think very much annoyed me at all about America. And a lot of things did bring me much joy. It's a beautiful country. Anyway, that's all I've got to say now. Do leave some comments on the thing. Follow me on Twitter and all that. Always like to hear from what you guys are saying and to encourage more debate. I said a lot of stuff today, didn't I? Israel, trans, evolution, dissident dialogues, Dawkins, Alex O'Connor, all these things. I hope it was of some interest as you walk around or go on a jog or listen in your cars on long trips. If it's hard to hear in the car, you have to turn the bass down because the bass is there for the music. But when you're hearing people talk, it's too bassy. You have to turn that down and it becomes much easier to understand amidst all the traffic and highway or motorway noises. Do get hold of my book, by the way, The Psychology of Secrets, My Adventures with Murderers, Cults and Influencers. That is out in all the places. It has, at the time of speaking, 66 reviews on Amazon UK. I think it's got 40 or something in America. You can only get it in the UK right now, though, so that's why the UK has more. And even if you're in America, get it on the Amazon UK website and get it shipped over to wherever you guys happen to be in the world. Lots of Aussies listen, for example. 66 reviews, and I think 63 of them are 5-star, which must be setting a record. People are really enjoying my book, so do go and get that. The Psychology of Secrets, My Adventures with Murderers, Cults, and Influencers. I'll see you next time.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.